Roy Boylan of Sportsnet joins us now, wrote an article on this. Roy, thanks for joining us on this Friday. How are you?
I'm not bad. Yourself?
Good, thank you. You might have just heard part of our debate. You always get into that situation if you're picking fourth or fifth or earlier after the number one consensus is gone. Do you take best player available? But for the Canucks, they're pressing needs on the blue line.
Yeah, and I hope you guys get a little bit of lottery luck this time.
So we won't. We're prepared for it. It's not a good week for Vancouver, Rory. It's not going to happen, as you and I.
Everyone knows the Canucks are not getting number one overall.
Well, you know, if you're not going to get number one and you move down out of that top three and you're really keying up on a defenseman, then, you know, the backup prize then is Adam Bockvist, this sub-6-foot defenseman in Sweden. He's not playing in the top Swedish league where Rasmus Dahlin is playing. He's playing in their junior league, but he's been extremely productive there, 14 goals in 25 games for the Brynäs team this season. And that is, you know, almost an historical level. Only Lars Johnsson from 99-2000 had scored more goals in that league by an under 18 player in the history of it. He's ahead of the pace set by Victor Hedman, who was, you know, 2 years younger than him at the time, and Erik Karlsson, who was the same age for him at that time. And he did it in far fewer games, so his goals per game are actually quite a bit higher than those guys. He's right now, he's not playing in that league. He's on loan in the Allsvenskan, which is kind of their secondary pro league there. But he's had a tremendous showing in that junior league this year. A smallish guy, excellent skater, can move the puck. He's going to have the same kind of improvements in his game that any young player needs. He needs to, you know, get stronger, better on the defensive side of the puck. And he's probably not a guy who's going to come into the NHL right away. Don't even know if he'll come into North America next season, or maybe he stays in Sweden and plays in that top pro league next year. So he's a little bit more down the road, but it would be a nice little backup pick for them if they're really keying in on a defenseman and you don't end up in that top three. But I do think if you end up in that top three, even if your need is a defenseman, not so much on the wing, I think you have to take best player available.
It's just so rare that a defenseman goes number one overall. The last one was was Ekblad. Prior to that, it was Erik Johnsson. And I don't think there was one prior to that until the mid-90s or something like that. You got to go back that far. It's a lot of pressure to put on a kid, but Dahlin is worth all of that hype, isn't he?
Oh, for sure he is. From everything that we've seen of this guy, he's been up to the challenge. I mean, he's so shifty with the puck. I mean, look on Twitter or YouTube for any highlight pack and just the way he so fluidly moves with it and dekes out the forwards that are coming to get him at the line. And whether it's, you know, creating a chance right after that himself with the puck or finding the open man right away, he's really got that offensive sense. I mean, he was on, as I'm sure you know, the Vancouver radio station out there earlier this week. And again, like he talked about needing to get stronger, needing to get better on defense. And that's not unusual. But this is a guy who is playing in the top pro league in Sweden. That's one of the best leagues in the world. He's playing against men, guys who have played in the NHL even before. He's been getting some great leadership from Henrik Lundqvist's brother over there too, which he also elaborated on a little bit. So he's got that. I would expect that he's going to be a guy who comes right into the NHL. Now, even Ekblad and Erik Johnsson, you know, not a lot of defensemen who are picked in the first round come right to the NHL and have, you know, really tremendous seasons right out of the gate. So I think the expectations need to be maybe tempered a little bit. Like, we can't expect Rasmus Dahlin to come in and win the defenseman scoring title and be up for the Norris Trophy or anything like that. It's going to be a little bit of a process because that defense position is a little bit more of a long-term build for a player coming to the NHL, whereas a forward can more likely come in and be an impact guy right away if he's picked up at the top of the draft. But there's nothing to say that he can't come in, log some really good minutes, be a power play guy, and be a real positive contributor, be a guy who can move the puck. I mean, the NHL game is all about speed with your legs, with your feet, and also just the ability to move the puck up the ice and on target quickly. And that's the absolute strength of this guy's game. So he should be able to transition pretty well and pretty quickly into the NHL.
Sportsnet's Rory Boylan joins us. Perry Solikowski, Dan Riccio on point on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned the way the game is changing, Rory. It used to be, oh yeah, we're looking for a D-man. You know, he's 6 feet, 6'2", can skate pretty well, 215. You mentioned Bokvist. We've had Ty Smith of Spokane on. Are there more defensemen who will be available in the next few years that can make an impact down the road in the NHL because size and being 6'2" and 220 is not what's needed now? It's the ability to skate, to move a puck and jump up into the play. And if you can do that with great skating skills at 5'10", 185, you can play in this league right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in some cases, the league is still kind of catching up to that idea. There are still a lot of guys who, you know, don't get drafted or get drafted late, who maybe move down that far because the size leads them to get overlooked a little bit. I mean, just from a forward perspective, look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and all the 20 goal scorers. I think there's five of them right now on that team. One of them is over 6'1" and 185 pounds. So from that perspective, you know, you can clearly see that you can get a lot of production out of guys like that. And there are some of those guys were, again, drafted third round or later, or like Yanni Gord, not even drafted at all. And from the defense perspective, I think maybe it's a little bit slower coming around to that idea because there is still value in having, you know, a big guy who can play some physical minutes for you. You don't want to have, you don't want to be completely devoid of that on your roster, I think. But the most important skill that a guy can have in the NHL right now is that speed, is that puck moving ability. So as that kind of catches on more and more and more, I think you're going to see those kind of guys be valued a little bit more. Now, the next available defenseman, next highest ranked defenseman anyway on Sportsnet list is Noah Dobson, who's a 6'3" guy. So he's not one of those kind of smaller guys, but he is a guy who's been shooting up the draft boards from the start of the year. The highest scoring under 20 player in the QMJHL, under 20 player who's a defenseman in the QMJHL. So there's also, you know, there are still guys now too who while the, you know, 6'5", 5'11" guys have to be able to move the puck and skate well to get to the NHL, there's still a lot of guys who are 6'2", 6'3", maybe 6'4", who have that physicality to them, but now they also have to be able to skate and move the puck, and they're training that way, and they're getting better at that, and they're more capable, so that makes them a little bit more valuable too. They're not going to go completely away. They just have to adapt and get better at those skills.
What have you made of the Canucks season, Rory? I feel sometimes we're maybe a little bit too close to it. We're always having this discussion of are we too critical? Maybe we aren't critical enough. I know Dmitry Filipovich wrote about that at sportsnet.ca today. How do you view the Canucks season and where they are currently at in trying to get back to being a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, I think it's gone pretty well how most people anticipated. You know, I think we were expecting them to be towards the bottom of the league, maybe not right at the bottom, but towards the bottom of the league in that kind of spot. Again, nobody saw Brock Besser coming to the degree he did, and he certainly helped them along. But, you know, this is still very much a work in progress. I am not someone who really believes that you have to tank. I think there is value in surrounding the young guys that you are bringing into the NHL for the first time with guys who have experience, can carry themselves well, will set that example for young players, because I think the Edmonton Oilers are a great example of a team that really didn't surround their top players with that. And it's really tough to work your way out of a losing culture when you don't have somebody or a few players setting the tone. And that doesn't mean just go out and sign any over 30-year-old player to come in and surround your young players with that. It has to be the right kind of guy, the guy who does know how to set that tone, who isn't going to get down too much in a situation where the team is struggling to win. So in that regard, I can understand and see what the Canucks are trying to do. I think maybe some of the frustration is in the fact that it took them so long to admit that they were in a rebuild when it was pretty obvious to everybody else that they had to do it. And in a way, they kind of were doing it, although they weren't accumulating the draft picks to the degree you traditionally maybe should be at this point. You're just getting lottery tickets to try and hit on somebody in the second, third, fourth round of the draft. But I think, you know, they did well at the trade deadline last year to pick up the prospects they did. It wasn't as strong this year, but I really think that was just the market. You had to trade Thomas Vanek for whatever you could get, and this is what the market was going to bear this year. It was different than last year. So you have to like what Elias Pettersson is doing in Sweden, Cole Lind in the WHL. I mean, there are a lot of promising things coming up through the system, and it's just still a process for them. They're not going to be, I don't think, a big bounce-back team next year, but, you know, if they can hit on this number one pick or maybe get that number two or number three overall pick, it moves them a little bit further down the road. It's really tough to also rebuild your way out of this. If you're just getting that fifth overall pick every time, you don't get that really big generational, first line guy right out of the way who's going to launch you quicker than you otherwise would be.
Of course, Rory, we can hear you on Hockey Central Saturday on our station. The Canucks will be in Vegas on Tuesday for the second time. Vegas, a couple of scores where you go, oh, what's going on there? Is the season maybe a couple of weeks too long for Vegas? It's been such a great ride, so emotional. I wonder if this team come playoff time may have the success or maybe crash a little bit to reality. Do you see that happening to them?
Well, when you look at some of the stats and some of the shooting percentages, and the one that screams to me is William Karlsson's shooting percentage is close to 25%, which everybody knows by now is completely unsustainable. There are some individual performances that will not carry into next year. It's hard to see them carrying into next year. I think to some degree, this Vegas team has to cool off and come back to earth next year. They can't possibly be this good again, can they? It does look like they're cooling off a little bit right now, and maybe the percentages are kind of starting to catch up to them now. And if you look at the teams that are, making a push for this wild card spot, Colorado was kind of cooling off, and then back comes Nathan MacKinnon, and he's right back in the Hart Trophy race again. They got an underrated guy there in Mikko Rantanen. I mean, there's a lot of high-end talent on that team that in a seven-game series could really keep up with a team like Vegas that is so good at moving with speed and moving in transition, as would the Dallas Stars be. I think they could be a tough team to match up with defensively, and they certainly have the offensive firepower with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn leading the way. And I think the nightmare matchup, if they get in, is the Anaheim Ducks, because they have the experience. They have they can play any game. They can play you with speed. They can grind you down in the corners. And I think there are just teams that look better and are maybe pacing better at this point in the season, aren't slowing down to the degree that Vegas is, that maybe it's just going to be a matchup thing for them. But that said, Marc-Andre Fleury has been fantastic for them when he's been healthy this year and is still the goalie. He's won a couple cups in his career and can steal a series. And really, Vegas has proved to us that you can never count them out, right? So who's to say that they couldn't win a series or two? I would be shocked if they got out of the Western Conference. There seem to be better and deeper teams that have more sustainable performances. But Vegas, again, they play quick. They play well in transition. And that's what you have to do in the NHL right now. So with a good goalie, they might be able to win a round or two.
Rory, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy what's left of your Friday.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
All right, there's Rory Borland, who... you can hear, you can read him on Sportsnet.ca. You can hear him on Hockey Central Saturday.
Sportsnet 650.